Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome to E-Commerce Momentum, episode 35, Brendan Sullivan of Prime Zero Prep. You know, Prime Zero Prep is one of the new prep companies that have come out, and they really have exploded. Brendan walks us through how they kind of got started, what made him make the jump into a full-time prep position. He does credit his partner, by the way, little hint for you. But it's just amazing to me how quickly this company has really found their place. And Brendan walks us through some of their processes, which I think have made them successful. So let's get into the podcast. All right. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. And, you know, what's really interesting to me as I interview service companies, the level of detail, the level of knowledge, the level of caring that I find from them, and I find it from their users, quite frankly. And this person, Brendan Sullivan from Prime Zero Prep, is no exception. I've heard nothing but great things about him and his service. Welcome, Brendan.
Thank you for having me, Stephen.
I really appreciate you taking the time. You know, it is interesting to me. You know, I interviewed John Bullard, and I still use John Bullard. And there was a few companies back then, and I've been selling an FBA, I guess, you know, since 2011, so quite a long time. And there were a few companies there, but really, most of them haven't made it through. Now, his company is thriving, and he's into a whole bunch of different things. But in the last year or so, there have been a few companies, new companies, that came along, and your company being one of them. And your company, quite frankly, is one that's talked about a lot because you're closed, right? You're not taking new customers, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
So I'm interested to see, to understand how you came to be a prep company, because you're not selling anymore. You were a seller. And I'm interested in that whole process. So you started selling about 7 years ago. But what did you do before then, before you even went into eBay?
So I've always been a part-time seller. So this was always kind of a secondary income for me. So in conjunction with eBay and Amazon and prior to that, I've always been in sales. So I've always been in a customer-orientated business, been in the retail setting, been in the outside retail setting. So that's kind of what I've been doing for the last, you know, 17 years of my life until we opened the doors to Prime Zero Prep earlier this year.
So that retail experience, so were you dealing B2B or B2C? How was that?
It was a little of both. I mean, I worked in retail stores where customers came to us. I did some B2B. I did a lot of Road Warrior type stuff. So I'm pretty well versed in just sales in general from all different types of aspects. I think, you know, dealing with customers at all levels, whether it's a CEO of a business or whether it's somebody just looking to replace their furniture in their home, has allowed me to really kind of be a better people person, which I think is one of the reasons why we've seen some success out the gate over here.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. And I think that comfort level of being able to talk to people about their business, if you've been in that environment, so it's not an uncomfortable thing. If you've seen behind the scenes of businesses, you can talk about it, right? Do you think it also helps that you worked in retail, so you saw the way retail receives their goods? I don't think people have ever seen the back rooms of these retail establishments and have ever seen what really goes on, because it's kind of funky when you do see it. Do you think that has helped you in some way as you're sending stuff for others out of your facility, knowing that it's going to go to a warehouse in a similar environment?
Yeah, definitely. You know, watching warehouses in past businesses that I've worked at operate has allowed me to kind of take what I've learned and translate it into what we do over here. I also brought in a business partner of mine when we first started, and that's what he did for the last 12 years of his life. He managed a small box retail store, pretty big national chain, and he had a lot more experience kind of in the day-to-day operations on the warehouse side. So I think me and him combined were just a good fit to where he can really test out our efficiencies by bringing to the table what he's learned in his past experience. And then I specialize more on the dealing with the day-to-day functions with our customers, whether it's just basic communication or whether it's just attention to detail for their specific items that they send to us. So it's a combination of two different people bringing a lot of good things to the table.
Now, you've upgraded in size of the warehouse, and we're going to talk about that. But I'm interested in that statement. So you have a partner who was experienced in this business world in some way and seen some of that, and he brought tools or ideas. Give us an example of something that, you know, he brought to the business that you wouldn't have thought of when you were doing your own FBA, because you were your own seller. I guess we should qualify that right now. You sold on FBA for a couple of years, so you were a seller, and you've now evolved into this. Do you have an example of something that, you know, you were like, huh, I wish I would have thought of that? Because my goal of the podcast is to help people move forward. And it's not that I'm trying to not bring you customers, right? That's not our goal. You're not taking any anyway, so I don't think that's a big deal. But it's just that if you have something that you wish you could have said, oh, I wish I would have done that, it would have made my world easier.
You know, one thing he does really well is his organizational skills are a lot greater than mine. And when you have a warehouse and when you have, you know, 100 plus customers, you have to be really organized. I was okay with shipping out a couple hundred items myself every week. You know, I would receive items all week long, then do one shipment plan at the end of the week. And that I could handle that, and it was no issue. When we first came into this space, you know, we took on 15, 20 people, and out the gate, I was just like, I don't know how to organize the flow of this. So, you know, he set up a pretty simple plan for us to where we have, you know, I don't know how this can translate to many of the smaller sellers out there, but, you know, we have a couple people now that just do receiving. So all they do is they take the incoming products, they reconcile it against the spreadsheets we have on file, they inspect all the items, they identify what needs to be prepped, and then they'll put identifiers on those product boxes. So, you know, later on when our prepper comes in, he'll look for those identifiers. He'll pull them out of the box. He'll do the prep that's necessary. So things hit three different stages.
Well, let's break them down then, because I think it is applicable. Maybe it's not separate people. So you're saying when you receive your items, right, you're receiving, and maybe we'll bring it down to small scale. So there's a shipment coming in from Steve. I had already sent you, or I guess you're signing into my Amazon account. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, I mean, with when it comes to checking in stuff, we use – like Google Docs or some other live spreadsheet format.
So I've exported to you in some way to say, hey, here's what you can expect, right?
Correct.
And then you're receiving it, and it says, oh, this is Steve's stuff or whatever. It's coming in. Oh, this is what we're supposed to get. So you're looking for crushed boxes. You're looking for damaged items on the outside. Have you refused shipments because of that or noted it with the carrier?
Yeah, there's been many circumstances to where the carrier would bring us a box and the box would be torn up, and, you know, they would try to kind of Frankenstein the box on their end. And we would make a note and have them sign off on that, and they would do the same on their end. So there's been a handful of situations like that.
That's a good process right there, right? So you're saying, hey, that's a process, and you can even take a picture of it, because I've seen that done with UPS. So you receive the product, you're now checking it, and you're looking for any discrepancies, and I'm sure you find them, right? But if, let's assume it didn't, you got past there. So that's stage one. Tell us now what happens in stage two.
So after stage one is complete, which is, you know, our receivers checking it in and then identifying what needs to be prepped, what they'll do is if there's something in a box that, say, needs to have a price sticker removed, they'll put an orange sticker on the outside of the box, and that identifies or allows our prepper to identify just by looking at a stack of boxes to say, all right, I can grab this box and that box, open them up, and I know there's some prep work inside of them, instead of him one by one going through every single box trying to figure out, all right, what do I have to bag? What do I have to remove stickers from? Pretty simple. We have a couple different color codes we use here. So if something needs a sticker removal, we'll put an orange sticker on the outside of the box. If something needs to be bagged, we'll put a pink sticker on the outside of the box. And we have a bunch of different colors, and those colors allow our preppers to say, all right, I need to bring this to the bagging station, or I need to bring this to, you know, where my heat guns are and stuff like that. So it streamlines everything to where they're touching the product and they're bringing it to a specific place to where they don't have to go back and forth too often. So it cuts down the overall labor hours we would end up using by having to go back and forth to try to figure out this kind of stuff.
So you're really dealing with the exceptions, not the norms, right? And that's really what you're describing, is you're saying, hey, you know, Steve's stuff came in, and at this point, only these products of that shipment need special attention, and you mark them as such, so they can basically flow right through to a point where that gets dealt with, but then the rest of it can actually flow right through your process. Am I hearing that right?
Exactly, yeah. So, you know, once it gets to the prepper, what we'll typically do, and every customer is different, we work with our customers to try to customize our model to work with them. So if they want to create a shipping plan after 50 items, that's fine. If they want to wait till they get to about 300, you know, we can do that too, as long as it's going to happen in a reasonable amount of time. So once he's done prepping their items then go on a rack. We kind of keep a close eye on the quantities based on what we've received on the Google Docs. And then when we get to the appropriate number, we'll request a shipping plan to be created. And that's when the customer will step in, create the shipping plans, and we'll kind of go from there. So that's stage three.
Okay, so we're up to stage. We just finished stage two. We're at stage three. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about that stage three through the end of the process and what it takes for an individual. Have you seen other efficiencies that we can transfer back to best practices, if we'll call it something like that? Okay, so let's take a break. We'll be right back. Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the Internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com. For more information, that's SellerEssentials.com. All right, before we jump back in, I just think that it's just so neat, again, to see a company come in, do what they're supposed to do, no drama, no issues, and they're having success. I just think that that's such a great lesson. They're actually doing what they are supposed to do. Brendan tells us that they have not lost one customer since they started. That's a big, bold statement, and not many other companies can say. So I give them a lot of credit for that. In this segment, we walk through the rest of their process and kind of how, you know, what their focus is. And it gives a lot of great advice for small sellers that you can bring back and put in place in your location. Real common sense stuff, but I bet you we could all use that advice. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Brendan Sullivan from Prime Zero Prep, and he is very graciously walking us through, and my head races ahead and asks like a million questions, and I jump so far ahead in my mind, and I'm always wanting to know. And it fascinates me that you guys, you know, I just can't imagine the volume that you guys are handling on a daily basis. It must be overwhelming sometimes just to even look out there and say, oh, we got a big day today, right?
Yeah, it's nice to – so I come in around 10 a.m., and it's nice when I come in and there's three freight trucks already loaded up outside dropping off stuff, because, you know, we're here. We have people here in the building at 8 a.m., so that's always a good sign. It's stressful, and, you know, a little bit of anxiety kicks in, but at the same time, it's an exciting feeling that our business is thriving so well.
It really must be, because it's got to be very rewarding to get through those big hump days. And now I'm assuming business is a little stronger now that the fourth quarter's come along. Have you actually thought about what level, you know, did you probe your sellers to say, hey, you know, do you do 50% more, or do you have any idea?
We've reached out to a couple of our bigger sellers to see kind of where they will be come this time of year. As a general rule of thumb, you know, we try to forecast sales, and I do it really just based on my knowledge and my networks with people that I talk to. So we have a pretty big space we're in right now, and we could easily add 15 times the amount of product into this space. But as a rule of thumb, I'm going to use 15 times as what I expect customers to send into their normal frequency. So we're not going to take on more customers because I anticipate everyone sending in maybe not that high of an amount, but I rather overestimate just to be safe.
Yeah, you don't want to disappoint your base, right? That you're building that foundational base of customers. And you've already alluded to how many customers you have. Do generally speaking, do most customers, have they been with you from the beginning?
Everyone that we've taken on since day one is still part of our services. We've added a decent amount in the past 60 days or so. And we pretty much have closed off our doors until the end of this year.
That's smart. Okay, so I know I took us off track because, again, my mind goes out there, and I want to bring us back. So we received the goods. We've now identified the items that need to be prepped differently. We've prepped them, I believe, right?
Correct, yeah.
And so now you pushed it back to me, and you said, Steve, create a plan, a shipping plan. So now walk us through what happens next.
So one thing we require up front is user permissions, which is a sub-account that we would have access to your Seller Central. And it's a great feature because it allows you to, A, outsource even more of the work that is typically required in this field. But you can also, you know, really control what access we have. So for us, we only need to be able to view your FBA inventory and shipments. So once you create the plan, we then log into your account via our user permissions, and we'll access the plan. We'll print out all product labels from within your seller accounts. We'll label your items. We'll ship them off in boxes according to how Amazon is distributing the shipments. And then we'll enter our weights and dimensions at the end, print out our UPS shipping labels or LTL labels, depending on how large the shipment is, and we'll close out the shipment. So it's a hands-off process. You know, the old school way, the way we used to do it when we first opened, was customers would email us a PDF file of their product labels. We would attach it to all the products, and then we would email them back their weights and dimensions. Then they would email us back shipping labels. And there was often a 24 to 48 hour lag, which would really slow down everybody. I mean, it would delay their items from getting to the fulfillment centers, and it would just take up extra space in our warehouse, and it was really unnecessary. So the user permissions has been really a game changer for us, and it's allowed us to be a lot more efficient, and it's been a win-win for everybody so far.
Yeah, it takes away the back-and-forth communication because my schedule doesn't meet your schedule usually, right? That's always the way it works.
Right.
And so once we've agreed where I'm going with that, boom, it's in your hands, and then I just don't worry about it because you handle all that.
Exactly.
What I like about the way your process works is you have a standard fee. Now, if you go to primezeroprep.com, right, you guys – pretty open in showing, you know, what your charges are.
Right.
And included in your standard price, you're going to have receiving, which you guys do, the inspection of the product and letting us know if there's something wrong, labeling, which you're printing the labels, I guess. You're going to poly bag for me. You're going to put a suffocation warning label on it if it needs it additionally. You're going to remove a sticker if it needs it. You're going to bubble wrap it if it needs it. You're going to pack it with other dunnage. You'll put expiration dates on it, which is really a big deal. And you're going to handle damaged items. That's all included in your standard fee, oversized fee, or multi-pack fees, correct?
Correct. Yeah, we wanted to give people kind of a simple upfront price. And so when they're making their purchases, they know exactly what they have to add to their cost of goods so they can figure out whether their buys are making sense. So this is the system we've come up with, and so far it's worked out great.
Yeah, it sounds like it's just so easy. Add whatever that fee is, and then, you know, you're shipping in, which they would incur anyway, right? So that's not a new fee. They would incur that shipping in to Amazon. So these fees would be things that they would have been paying for anyway, buying their own bags and all that kind of jazz. That now goes away. Here's my cost per item. And it does really make it a lot smoother. So you also are doing long-term LTL shipments.
Yes, we are. It's been a great option for those that are shipping heavier amounts of stuff at one time. I mean, we've seen our rates, they average around 14 cents a pound if we're shipping out LTL, which compared to our UPS rates, which is closer to about 40 cents a pound.
Where do you send? Where do you find yourself sending the majority of people's items? Right, because it's coming from New Hampshire, where you're located. Where are most of them going?
Most of it goes to Pennsylvania, which is a pretty quick transit time. We see it get there usually within 48 hours.
How about with the LTL? Is there a longer lag time for LTL shipments than there is for UPS?
There is. LTL doesn't get picked up the same day. Like with UPS, if we have an order ready to go in the morning, UPS comes by automatically twice a day to sweep us. So they're always going to pick it up that same day. Whereas LTL, you have to schedule a pickup, and they're usually good at coming here within a day or two the most, but their transit times are also probably a day or two longer. So overall, you could be looking at an extra 4 days before your stuff hits the warehouse, which is definitely something to consider. And this is kind of the conversation we have with our customers who are thinking LTL. The money savings is great. So if it's not something that needs to be in stock now, then this is the way to go. But if you're looking at a seasonal product and the deadline's kind of becoming close, then maybe LTL isn't the best option for you.
Well, or it takes a better management process. Andy Slammons talks about buying from China or India, and when it comes from China, he can get it air freighted to him, and he can have it within a couple of days.
Right.
With a boat, it takes a month. But if you use both, you can really be efficient, right? So his comments are always, look, in your case, it would be use UPS where it makes sense because you got to get product in there quick. But once you get to that stocking level, then it's just a matter of building in those extra 4 days. Where do most pallet shipments go?
Same thing. A lot of them have been going to Pennsylvania, some down to Kentucky. So it's been a lot of East Coast and down towards the coastal Florida area and that area as well. So nothing too far away.
And then they split it up at this is one of those receiving warehouses like in Hazleton or someplace in Pennsylvania, and then they just ship it out to all the other Amazon warehouses themselves, right?
Right.
That's what that is.
Yep.
Okay. Well, it's a really a fascinating process, and it sounds like you guys have really gotten it down. So we received the product, we put it in boxes, we shipped it out. Do you notify the sellers that, hey, a shipment went out for you, or is there a process after that?
The last step, we don't send out any notifications, but we do invoice people usually within 48 hours after their products go out. So that's kind of, I guess, our indication to them that, hey, we sent a shipment out for you. Here's your bill. So other than that, there's really no automatic notification. We are working on some new things. I know the Bullards have released some custom software, and we have some custom software in the works as well. And one of the features it will have is, as soon as the shipping plan does go out, it's going to automatically email the customer so they can be aware of where their products are at all times.
Offline, Brendan referred to John Bullard and the Bullards as the godfathers of prep and ship, and you're very respectful, and it's well-deserved. I mean, they're a massive operation. As you said, though, they've expanded in a lot of different things. You're basically focused on this and this only, right? I mean, this is your full-time gig.
Right, yeah. We do this. This is all we do. Our goal is to be as good and as efficient as humanly possible at this one service before we can even think about doing anything else kind of within the same niche or industry. So we're still focused on trying to just become more and more efficient, because we're really, that's our biggest thing. We want to be the go-to prep center. And I think you kind of noted this earlier. There's been a lot of prep centers that popped up, which is a good sign that the need is there for prep centers. But our goal is to not, you know, not be here for a year or two, but be here for a long, long time.
Now, will you consider expanding into other models? Now, John had told me that they're working on an eBay model for them. Is that anything that interests you or fulfilling for my private website, those kind of things?
You know, it's down the road where we're open to whatever is kind of a natural progression for our company. We haven't thought about that today just because we're still so focused on growing this part of the business.
Do you handle shipments overseas?
We don't ship out anything internationally at the moment. We have been in communication with somebody who does that quite frequently, and we've been kind of picking their brain on it. So that is something we're going to be hopefully getting into first quarter of next year.
So why would somebody – I mean, why are people coming to you? First off, you're in New Hampshire, right? Is there a tax benefit?
There is, yeah. New Hampshire is one of the 5 tax-free states. So, you know, anyone doing online arbitrage will not have to worry about chasing down tax exempts and stuff like that because you won't pay any tax when it's shipped here.
Okay. Now, I've heard some horror stories about some of those online stores shutting down because it's the same address. And they're saying, hey, wait a second. I can't keep sending it to Steve and Bob and Bill and John. They all are at the same place. Have you found a way to help deal with that?
You know, we're at kind of a crossroad with what's really going on with those claims. I mean, we've definitely seen people have their accounts canceled. Like they can't buy from Kohl's anymore because Kohl's has flagged them as a reseller. But we have a hard time believing it's our address because while those people don't send us anything from Kohl's, we still get Kohl's from multiple other sellers. But it's something that we haven't had to work any type of workaround because we haven't truly identified what the problem is. I think a lot of people will order in such enormous quantities that, you know, that could be one reason why they're being flagged. And then secondary, maybe they're looking at the address a little bit closer. But we have, you know, we have a lot of people that still have products being received on a daily basis from other companies that have banned many, many sellers that use our services as well.
So, yeah, I tend to agree with you, and because I've heard, you know, certain stores ban. I think each store is individual and it's different. And I think it's the person, the processor, the customer service person who happens to see it and says, hey, wait a second, this doesn't make sense. I tend to agree with you there that I think it's, you know, nobody's going to need 500 size 9 shoes, right? They're not going to need 500 pairs of the exact same thing. That would be a red flag for a lot of people. So I tend to agree with you there. Almost went the wrong way on that conversation. Whoops.
Well, it's funny. We see people order, you know, 500 of the same quantity, and then they'll get banned relatively quickly. And then we'll see another person order 5 of that same item, but they'll order it over 100 different orders, and that order will go through no problem. So I think a lot of it is, you know, the large quantities automatically get flagged in the system because, you know, like you said, who's ordering that type of quantity? It's definitely not for personal use. So I think for those that are having issues with maybe they think they might lose their account because of, you know, store A or B not liking resellers, I think just approaching that store and buying in smaller quantities over more orders might help you kind of fly below the radar.
So I assume you're having these conversations with your members to say, hey, you know, here's some things that we recommend, some best practices, right?
We definitely do. I mean, our Facebook group, we try to be pretty active. And anytime we see an issue pop up that can affect people that are using our services, we have those conversations publicly. We have, you know, had email blasts as well that kind of refer to this stuff. But for the most part, we keep everything on social media since that seems to be the easiest way to kind of talk about anything to anyone at any time.
Yeah, I'm a member of Prime Zero Prep Facebook group, and it's a closed group, and you have to request access, right? Is that what they do? Is that what they would request?
We approve everybody. It's just the way the group's set up. That's just how it worked out.
And so today's question was out there, what option would you prefer when paying for a service? So you're accepting other people's opinions, right? And you're listening to them, your members and your future customers, and saying, hey, here's the way. So I see quite a bit of that communication going on in there and some training stuff. I see you have a lot of stuff for how to do things, recommendations and other things. I think that's just great to have that conversation. I think people benefit. Do you when you think about where you are today, right, thinking about where you were and where you are today, looking back at it, how did you get the nerve to just give up the Amazon FBA piece and know that this is a viable business model for yourself?
So last year, during quarter four, I realized I maxed out, you know, how much I could do by myself being a part-time seller. I did about $60,000 for the month of December. And I worked maybe 8 hours a week, maybe 12, I don't know, somewhere in that range, but I was working a 50-hour a week job. So I didn't have a ton of time on my hands. So I was trying to figure out, all right, what's my next step? How can I take my business to the next level? And there was a couple options. One, I could quit my job and just go all in, but I wasn't too thrilled with that idea, not with FBA, at least. I mean, FBA definitely has a lot of ups and downs, and you should have a good bankroll before you take that kind of leap. You should have a good reserve kind of put away, and I wasn't ready to take that leap. My wife was 8 months pregnant at the time. There was just a lot on our plate. So then I said, all right, maybe I can outsource what I do to a prep center. And the more I talked about it, I spoke with some big guys within our groups, like Chris Green and some other people. And I said, listen, I live near a tax-free state. And at this point, there really wasn't much chatter about a tax-free prep center. One might have existed that I knew of, but they filled up pretty quickly, so they weren't taking on more customers. So I said, you know what, maybe I could just – you know, do a prep center myself and go from there. And I talked to a buddy of mine who's always been kind of intrigued with what I do, you know, Amazon related. I said, hey, this is what I'm thinking of doing. I got to do it quick. I said, I'll go all in. I'll leave my job. I can see this as being a more steadier pay rate for me. I said, are you interested? And he says, yeah, let's do it. So we both quit our jobs, beginning of February. It was like 2 days after my baby was born, and March 1st we opened up the doors, and we haven't looked back since.
And how many customers did you start with?
We took on 25 out the gate.
25 out the gate. You must have been terrified. So 25 with no – did you have a backup plan? What was your backup plan?
That's what made it terrifying, but you know what? We had no backup plan. Mark and I both left good paying jobs. We're both married, both have a lot of financial responsibilities. So there wasn't a backup plan. It was, we have to make it work. You know, we saw the demand there and we realized that this can work. We just have to execute. And that's why I think having your back to the wall sometimes, you know, if you put yourself in a position to where you're all in and you have to make something work, if the drive's there, then, you know, it's going to work out. And for us, we both were very driven. We were both willing to work 70, 80 hours a week for the first couple months until we had systems in place and until we could hire more people. And, you know, I wouldn't change the way anything has worked out. So far, everything has been great.
I've heard that phrase, burn the boats, right? That was what you guys did. You burned the boats. I mean, this was it.
Yeah.
You weren't gonna fail. You know, it's very interesting to me, again, because I've heard nothing but great things. People are dying to get into your service. And it definitely is some of the attraction of the tax-free, because that is neat, you know, that you don't have to be concerned about it. And that also allows people to hide behind the non-seller status in some ways too, right? Because everybody that goes, everything that's sent to New Hampshire is tax-free, so you don't have to fill out those certificates for the store. So I can see some value there. But I would say the rest of the value is just word of mouth, right? You're not out there pumping out advertising. Did you just grow organically, or did you have to promote it for a bit?
No, we grew organically. I mean, we had an interview about 2 weeks before we were launching, and you know, within a few days, we had about 85 people fill out a contact form on our website, and we accepted the first 35, and out of those 35, 25 actually sent us items, and then we just immediately closed our doors. And from there, it's just our waiting list has grew and grew and grew, and everything's been organic. We haven't had to do any marketing. Everyone that hears about us usually just hears about recommendations throughout the various Facebook groups and stuff like that.
Well, the fact that you can make that statement that everyone that started with you is still with you, that's a big deal. That's a very bold statement and a big deal, and it's proof, right? That's proven that you've been able to deliver. So do you think that you and your partner that complement each other, right? You said that he's much more organized and you're the better people person kind of. What doesn't work well? You know, I've heard about partnerships not working. Is it all unicorns and rainbows, or are there been challenges? And then how did you work your way through those challenges?
So, you know, I think that the biggest struggle is when you're working with a partner, you have to, sometimes you're going to have disagreements on your vision and what you think needs to be done. And we definitely had some disagreements along the way, you know, as far as, you know, how many employees we should hire, how much more space we should acquire, how our process should be. And after a while you realize, okay, Mark's my business partner, and his strengths are definitely his managerial skills and his efficiencies that he can put into place, especially in this warehouse setting. So I had to make a decision. I could keep, you know, suggesting things that he didn't really agree with, or I could step back and say, listen, Mark, this is your warehouse. You're the operations manager. You do everything you think needs to be done, and I'm not part of it. You know, I'm the guy. I'll work on the marketing, or I'll work on the FaceTime with the customers. So I think it's important to really identify the roles that you and your business partner are going to have, because you both can't be managers, right? You can't have 8 employees asking both of you questions. You need to have one person that can answer those questions, because while we agree on most things, if Mark says this item, you know, needs to be bagged, and I say, yeah, you know what, that item doesn't need to be bagged, it's really just going to confuse people. And people just need one kind of manager position in front of them. So I think that's probably been the biggest obstacle, is trying to figure out, you know, what my role is and what his role is. And within the first 4 or 5 months, we figured that out, and it's worked out great since.
It's neat, and it's very mature to say it that way, you know, that, you know, hey, you weren't real clear because, you know, you guys didn't go in with a giant business plan, right? You didn't have this formal document drawn up and consumer focus groups and all that kind of jazz, right? You guys went in and just went for it. And so it's neat that you've matured enough to be able, and as a partners, to be able to identify those roles and then stick with them. That's a respect issue, and I really admire you for that, because that's usually the reason most partnerships don't work. Nobody's willing to do that. And so that's very, very cool. Very cool. What's the best advice that you've gotten, and who'd you get it from?
That's a tough one. I watch a lot of reality type financial programs like Shark Tank and The Profit and stuff like that, and I see this a lot in Shark Tank, and they always tend to ask the entrepreneurs that are presenting their products what they do. If they, you know, are they all in on their product, or are they working a job somewhere else? And they always say that they're more willing to invest in somebody that is all in on their product because they have everything to lose. And I have that kind of embedded in my head, and that's kind of why I was willing to take a chance with this prep service, because I had to make a decision in my life. Do I want to work you know, 9 to 5 forever and make good money, but, you know, it's not where I want to be financially, or I want to take a chance and really try to change the way our financial situation is. And with the young one on the way, I really wanted to make that change. And while that was scary because, you know, now I have not just my wife dependent on me, but my wife and my daughter, it really put me in a position to where I had to be all in, and I had to focus 110% on the task at hand. So I think that's probably the best advice I've ever heard. Like, if you want to make a change, and I think that's probably the toughest thing for a lot of these entrepreneurs to do is make that leap to do something full time. And I'm definitely not suggesting you quit your regular job and dive into this full time. It's not necessarily ideal for everybody. But if you're in a situation and you're not happy and you have a good opportunity at hand, you have to sometime take chances, because, you know, the risk reward is greater typically when you take a higher risk. And I think, you know, that's kind of probably the best advice I've had and, you know, I've taken so far.
I think it's great advice. I mean, I think it's, you're saying, hey, I want to do something that I see a future in, right? As opposed to somebody else's future, right? Or what they, and it depends on somebody else. Do you feel, you know, you've been doing this long enough, has it become a job for you, or are you still enjoying going in and doing what you do?
I absolutely love what I do. I had this discussion today with Mark. Mark and I had a pretty big meeting for some local novelty company who sells a ton of different stuff. It's regional-based products, but they sell on Amazon, or they're trying to make the transition to Amazon. They reached out to us. They just did a Google search, and they found us somehow, and they do about 15,000 items a month, so they'd be a pretty big client for us. So we had a discussion with them today. We sat down. We went to their warehouse, and you know, they asked, they said, do you guys like still like what you do? Are you guys stressed out? Are you overwhelmed? And, you know, Mark and I looked at each other and we both just said, listen, we definitely have stress, right? But the stress we deal with now is a more satisfying stress than I've ever dealt with in my life. You know, when I was dealing with stress at other jobs, I would always say, oh, you know, I don't get paid enough to deal with this stress, or this stress is way above my pay grade. Now it's, you know, this stress is part of what is part of the reason our business is doing so well. We only have stress because we're just so busy, and you know, we're very grateful for the position we're in. And I absolutely love coming into the shop every single day. I mean, I'm a lot happier in general. You can ask my wife.
I think that's great. So you're happy helping other people be successful too, right? I mean, that's really what it is. It's very rewarding. Especially if you've helped, you know, a customer,
right,
fulfill their dreams. I mean, that is very rewarding. I think that's very, very cool. Do you have any personal habits that you have that are really that, you know, that you could suggest to others that are getting you? Because let's face it, you're dealing with a zillion widgets a day, right? That truck just keeps coming and the other truck comes right after it. You know, you've got to work your way through it. Any habits or processes that you use that you think that would transfer over to smaller sellers like myself?
You know, for me, it's tough to say because I'm at the point now where I don't do a whole lot within the warehouse space itself. I'm more on the back end. You know, for me, it's a lot of phone calls with, I talk to probably 10 to 12 customers on the phone a day. I email probably 300 times a day. I'm now in charge of kind of keeping track of quantity of items on site here, so we can make sure we're requesting shipping plans. So it's tough for me to say. I don't know what habits I have that I could pass along. You know, I think the biggest thing, if you're going to do this full time, you really have to come up with a schedule, and stick to it. You know, it's one thing to say, all right, I own my own business. I can wake up at 11 o'clock today and I can start around 12. It doesn't work out well sometimes when you do that because your days can run pretty quick. I'm here every day at 10 a.m. and I leave here every day at about 8 p.m. and I'm pretty stringent on that. Even if I'm done by 6:37, I try to stay here till 8 just because there's always something else I can do. Now, there's one of the benefits of owning a business is obviously if you have something you have to attend to, obviously you can leave early and attend to that. But for the most part, setting a strict schedule and sticking by it has been a great way for me to get a lot accomplished and also just be here to help my business do whatever needs to be done.
I think it's great advice. Again, consistency, right? You're showing up consistently and you're doing the work. I just think that's great advice. Do you so right now you have no openings. You do have a waiting list. How long is a waiting list?
It's pretty long. So right now there's probably about 200 people on our waiting list.
Wow.
But I'll be honest with you, when we send out our welcome letters to people, I would say about 35% of them actually get back to us and send us items. So out of those 200, maybe 70 of them are actual customers waiting to use our services. So come quarter one of next year, we'll probably send out an email to every single person on that waiting list and say, hey, ready to go, let's start shipping. But the amount of people that actually go forward with sending us items will be a lot less. So 200 is what we have on the waiting list, but I would say, the amount of actual active customers that will use our service is a lot less.
And you have no problem adding another 70 to your operation next year?
Yeah, we don't think it's going to be an issue. We're in a very good position. Our warehouse that we're in now is 17,000 square feet, and it's pretty full. We're putting up more racks, but we're in a warehouse that's about 100,000 square feet, and the whole warehouse is vacant. So if we want to knock down a wall, we can knock down a wall and take over another 40,000 square feet. Our landlord, who we've been very open with, he said if we need to take on like a 500,000 square feet, he will pay for us to move, and he'll break our lease and put us into a new building because he owns a lot of property in this area. So, taking on more customers, the only issue with taking on more customers is can we handle it? And we can always hire employees. And our biggest challenge right now is we want to get through a quarter four before we try to max out our customers. So once we get through this quarter four, if we don't have any hiccups, I don't see taking on another 70 being an issue.
Well, you mentioned employees, and let's just talk about employees for a second, right? So you have about 10 employees. How, the training process, now your partner's in charge of the warehouse piece. How do you go about taking somebody? I mean, everybody coming in with master's degrees in shipping and packaging, right? I'm assuming. Is that the way it comes?
You'd be surprised. We have a couple guys here who we have one guy here that actually worked for a company. They weren't a prep center, but they did some Amazon stuff. So he had a very good background, and he is awesome. But I mean, for the most part, Mark and I, we worked side by side for the first 6 months, both of us doing every facet of this business together. And Mark, he honestly, now that he does it more than I do it, he would be able to answer any question Amazon related because of how often he's doing these things. So he's very good at training people. That was part of what he did when he worked at his previous job. So the training is all him. He interviews everybody. He does phone interviews first, and he does live interviews on site. So he has a very meticulous way of doing things. And so far, every employee we've had on site has been outstanding.
How long does it take for somebody to get up to speed where they're really productive?
I would say on average, 3 to 4 weeks. Some pick up things a little bit quicker, but yeah, on average, probably about a month or so.
Yeah, there's just so many rules, and there's so many, well, it's done this way, except, right? There's so many accepts,
right?
And that's got to be a challenge.
Well, we typically hire people just for one position too. Like our receiver doesn't prep stuff and doesn't put stickers on, the processing items at the end. So when we hire somebody, we're hiring them for a specific job. If their job is to just prep, then all they're learning is how to remove stickers, how to heat seal a bag, and how to identify what needs prep. So we're very focused on them being very, very, very good at one specific position, opposed to just doing everything that needs to be done. Because we're all about aces in their places. We don't want we'll cross train at some point and just kind of, to have them have that background in case someone else is not able to do a specific task, and we can bring them over. But for the most part, they're doing one job. And their focus is that one job. So we expect them to be good at that one job.
I think it's great. Aces in their places. That's a corporate term. I love that term. Corporate sales term, as a matter of fact, right? Yes. So I hear that background in there. You know, I'm really impressed with how quickly you guys have really made your place, and I think you're clear on what your goals are. I think that that's really one of the reasons you've been so successful. The goal of this podcast is to help people move forward, right? And so, you know, we really want to take that small seller who's part-time or whatever, and they want to make that transition to full-time. So give us a tip, a trick, something that you think that somebody can use to help move their business forward tomorrow. Not tonight. Give them the night off or whatever. You're the only one working tonight, right? So how about tomorrow? What can they do to move their business forward?
You know, I think at some time, when you're first starting out, you want to kind of – your business is your baby, so you want to be doing every aspect of it, right? You want to receive the items. You want to inspect the items. You want to label the items. You want to prep and pack and ship them all out. But I think the best thing you can do to bring your business to the next level is to outsource a task. And it's not necessarily using a prep center. You know, maybe you hire a family member to come by on the weekends to do all your prep for you. Or maybe you know, if you're big into online arbitrage, you hire a VA to do all your sourcing for you. But I think trying to replace yourself in specific positions is one of the best ways to scale your business. It's hard to do, you know, and I had this challenge when I was trying to figure out what my next step was. Like, I didn't want to give up any of the things I did because I always thought no one could do it better. Well, I was very wrong because there's plenty of people that can do it even better than me. And I've seen that here, and I've seen it very quickly. I mean, the people that we have processing items right now, they process twice as fast as I process, and they do it really, really good. So I think the best advice I could give is figure out what you can outsource, and then follow through with it.
It's very humbling to see somebody just blow you away, and you think to yourself, oh, my God, I really am not that good, right?
Yes, exactly.
And that's healthy because that's when you'll grow the most, when you say, that's not my skill set. I didn't think it was. Maybe I did, but now I've proven that it absolutely was not my skill set because that's clearly that person's skill set. Right. I think that's great advice. All right, the best way to get in touch with you, because we know that there's a waiting list. The best way to get on the waiting list is primezeroprep.com, and I'll have links to all this stuff, right? But again, Brendan said that the Prime Zero Prep Facebook group where they share information, it's a closed group, but you need to request access to it, right?
Correct.
Okay. So I really appreciate you taking the time. I'm really impressed with how quickly you've come up, how efficient you've become, how focused you guys are. I wish you nothing but success, and it's just really great to see you find your place in this e-commerce world. Really cool.
I appreciate it, Stephen.
Hey, have a great night.
You too. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.